From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of January 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from Total Grain Marketing, the elevator here in Champaign County. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures across the board finished about a penny to a penny and a half higher for the day. New crop December up a quarter at 498 and a half. The March at 465 and a quarter. March beans were 3.5 cents higher at 1277. November 1225 and a quarter, up 3 and a quarter for the day. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, at the elevator system in the southern half of the state. And, of course, he's at the Champaign elevator. Thank you much for being with us today. Things were quiet, I assume, over the holiday. And now producers are thinking, hey, wait a second, these first couple of days, or at least the first trade day, was not good in the marketplace. But before we get to that, what did last year look like as it's related to the price of corn and soybeans?
Well, we started our cash price, old crop corn, was at $6.74 to start January of 2023. We made our high in February, and then we went down and made a low in November at $4.40 cash. And we finished the year right around 450. So we lost 33% of the old crop value in corn last year. New crop corn started at 581 and finished at 451. So we lost about 22% of the corn, of the new crop corn value. Soybeans weren't near as bad. We started the year at 1514, made the high in February at 1539, made the low in October at 1223, but we finished at 1274, which was down 16%. So not nearly as bad as the corn. And then the new crop beans started at 1387, finished at 1274. So that was only an 8% drop in bean values on new crop beans. So, definitely lower, but percentage-wise, the beans really held their value pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, what's the difference in the fundamentals that managed to make that happen?
The big thing is the stocks-to-use ratio. Ending stocks on beans are right around 200 million bushels with what we're using in the world. That's a 5% stocks-to-use ratio, which is extremely tight. Anything under 8 to 10% is extremely tight. Corn, on the other hand, 2.0, 2.1, 2.2 billion bushel carryout, and we're using not quite 15 billion bushels. That's about a 14-15% stocks to use ratio. So it's not extremely burdensome, but there's just not a story to sell to the traders at this point until we see either a weather problem show up somewhere or some unexpected export demand from China or some other country. It's just a nice, comfortable situation, and that's the difference between corn and beans. The bean situation is tight, whereas the corn situation is just adequate.
Is there a weather problem yet to come in South America, do you suppose, for corn in the safrinha? And is it because it's the second crop and not in the ground that the marketplace hasn't gotten excited about this yet?
I think you're exactly right. We are 2 to 4 weeks behind soybean harvest. You know, they didn't get the beans planted on time because it was so dry. And it's been dry up in the northern part of Brazil, but now they're starting to get some rain. So it'll impact the bean yields a little bit, probably 10%. But you have to remember they planted 4% more acres, so it's not going to be a 10% drop in production. It might be just a 6% drop in production. But the more important thing, as you alluded to, is the fact that they're harvesting those beans 2 to 4 weeks later means that they're going to plant the corn, the safrinha corn, 2 to 4 weeks later. And most of the corn, the large majority of the corn grown in Brazil, is double crop corn. So we haven't talked about weather problems yet, but that is certainly on the back burner, and that could move to the front burner depending on how the weather shakes out over the next, several months. But that's certainly something to keep an eye on the double crop corn down in South America.
Producers will need to begin paying some bills. What do you suggest in the way of sales?
Well, I tell people the good news is that with corn at the bottom, we are at contract lows. We made a new contract low yesterday. We're up a penny so far today. Since we're at the lows, I don't think we need to go a whole lot lower. But the bad news is the market knows that the farmers are undersold on corn, and there's not a story to get them excited. So we may see a stalemate here where, you know, the traders don't need to buy back their short positions, feel like they don't need to buy back their short positions. The farmers feel like they don't really want to sell their long positions just yet. So for the month of January, we may just see a sideways type market. Now, as we get into February, closer to March, I think the focus will start shifting towards the Safrina crop and how the corn crop is faring, how if it got planted in time or not, and also how many acres we are going to plant to corn here in the U.S. If you remember, we planted 94.9 million acres last year, which is a huge, huge amount of corn. With the prices where they are, you would think it might be more normal. You know, the average over the last 10 years has been right around 91 million acres. So we may see something closer to 91 million acres of corn. But even with that, a normal crop still gets you real close to 15 billion bushels, which is about what our usage is. So I guess the bottom line is we could see a short, you know, short-term rally as we try to maybe try to quote-unquote buy some corn acres as we go into the spring. But without a weather problem either here or in South America, or without some unexpected demand, export demand showing up from China or some other country, it feels like the market's kind of comfortable with this 2 billion bushel carryout.
Yeah, so you're telling me that the month of January is a stalemate. That's mostly because there will be corn moving, whether it's already been marketed and being delivered in January, or there are some bushels that end up coming into the marketplace regardless of what that price might be. And then in February, we're still going to wait it out. The tone for February, March usually is set with the USDA's final numbers that come out next Friday. Not this one, but the following one on the 12th. Any expectations for changes in the reports that are due out that day? There's several of them: the final crop production report of the year, the grain stocks report, the wheat seedings report as well. Anything in those that you'll be watching closely?
You know, the yields seem to be very good, and maybe this is a backyard bias, but the yields in the eastern Corn Belt seem to be better than expected, and a lot of times you'll see a little bit of follow-through in the final January report. So I guess based on Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, I wouldn't be surprised to see the yield bump up a half a bushel or so, which could get your carryout up over 2.1, closer to 2.2 billion bushels. But I think a lot of that's factored in. Whether it's 2.1 or 2.2, the market knows we've got plenty of corn. So I think once we get past the report, and usually that report is a market mover one way or the other, but once we get past that, I think we all eyes focus on the weather in South America and how many acres we get planted here up in the U.S.
How are things here in the United States logistically at this point? Have we had enough rainfall to help fill out the river system?
Not really. I mean, you know, the few inches that we've had here in December, you know, certainly helped, but we're still 7 inches below normal in most areas for the month or for the year of 2023. We were 7 inches below normal for the year of 2022. So, you know, it's going to be hard to make that up. You know, the Panama Canal is allowing a few more ships to go through, but still way below what they're used to having go through. With all the turmoil in the Red Sea area, ships aren't going that way. So basically, we're shipping less. It's through the traditional avenues, and it's taking longer to get them through the areas that they can go through. And so that's just adding, you know, more cost to the end users, and that's not good for demand.
Hey, thank you much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. In today's agricultural news, new data from USDA's Economic Research Service, or the ERS, shows genetically engineered crops dominate the U.S. agricultural sector. GE seeds were commercially introduced in the United States for major field crops in 1996, with adoption rates increasing rapidly in the following years. The two main GE traits are herbicide tolerance and insect resistance. The data shows that by 2008, more than half of the corn, cotton, and soybean acres in the United States were planted to at least one GEC trait. Today, more than 90% of those acres are planted using at least one GE trait. Other traits have been developed, including resistance to viruses, fungi, and drought or enhanced protein, oil, or vitamin content. Now, while herbicide-tolerant seeds are also widely used in alfalfa, canola, and sugar beet production, most GE acres are occupied by the three major field crops, corn, cotton, and soybeans. Well, fuel prices began the new year declining after a late-year increase during the holiday season. GasBuddy reports the nation's average gasoline price reverted, falling 1.6 cents from a week ago to $3.06 a gallon. The national average is down 17.3 cents from a month ago and 12.6 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The national average diesel price fell 4.5 cents last week and stands at $3.96 a gallon. That's 71 cents lower than a year ago, says GasBuddy's Patrick DeHaan. The good news, he says, continues for average diesel prices, which slipped below $4 a gallon and stand at their lowest level since the summer. On that declining price note, the White House's climate agenda has hit some turbulence amid record U.S. oil production and pushback from some in agriculture. So you won't hear the president boast about it, but the Washington Post reports the U.S. is producing more than 13 million barrels of oil a day, a record, even as his climate spending now soars. But gas prices have eased. Meantime, Republicans like Doug LaMalfa of California's rural 1st District are pushing back on the president's climate agenda.
And planting crops and transporting anything. If you got it, a truck brought it. It's probably a diesel-powered truck. As you see, so many efforts, failed efforts of electrifying vehicles, cars, trucks, etc. Oh, there's a few out there getting around, yes, but not on a dependable basis to keep our supply chain going.
And after the COP28 in Dubai,
you have elites over at conferences like this saying, we need to cut back on meat. We need to cut out agriculture. They want us to cut 30% of our agriculture. Well, there's already a food shortage in much of the world, and even in some of our urban areas in this country, as we call them food deserts. You want to depend on it coming from somewhere else? That works really great. Wait till they have a food embargo like the fuel embargoes we had in the 70s.
And while agriculture has embraced some of Biden's climate agenda, like conservation spending and carbon credits, LaMalfa and others argue it's gone too far.
So it's about time we put aside this nonsense of getting to some kind of zero output of carbon by 2035 or 2050 or whatever nice round number that they dream up as a goal, like in my home state of California.
LaMalfa argues the U.S. and Europe have already cut carbon emissions 10 to 15%, while China, India, and others have done little. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hope you had a great holiday, and glad to be talking with you again today, Drew.
Oh, yeah. In a new year, we can start over again, right?
Well, it sounds like we're starting over in South America. You better update me on what happened in the last week and a half to 2 weeks there that changed the functions in the marketplace and on the ground, I guess.
You know, when we came up on the long Christmas weekend, we started getting some significant rain to fall across some of the driest areas in central west and northeastern Brazil. It wasn't all that terribly impressive, but it was good enough to bolster the topsoil moisture in several areas. And it just as a refresher and reminder, as some of that area, center west and northern Brazil in general, it has been dealing with prolonged dryness or certainly below normal precipitation and a lot of concern about how well the crops were doing and whatnot. So the Christmas weekend event was a step in the right direction in bringing in relief for that. And then we went through the following week without a lot of change and came into the New Year's weekend, and we did it all over again. And so now we're in a very active weather pattern, and we should be seeing more rain occurring over the next 10 days, if not two full weeks, across these same areas from Mato Grosso over to Tocantins and northern Goyas, parts of Bahia and northern Minas Gerais. Those areas will have a completely saturated soil by this time next week, and there will be plenty of moisture around. In the meantime, just a little bit farther to the south in Sao Paulo and Paraná, as well as portions of Mato Grosso do Sul, those areas are dealing with a temporary drying trend right now. The ground is firming up, but they've got good subsoil moisture. It's not a huge event, but it will continue to dry out for another, let's say 5 to 7 days. And some of those areas might go another full 10-day period before they get rain. But after that, I think things will snap back around. So there might be a little market chatter out there about the drying in interior southern Brazil, but I wouldn't get too wound up about it. And in Argentina, they are in a world of difference relative to last year at this time. You know, they had a serious drought underway at this point last year, and they've been getting some very well-timed rain over these past few weeks. And that has also included parts of Rio Grande do Sul and southern Brazil in general, as well as Paraguay and parts of Uruguay. And so all of those areas are going to easily have a normal crop, but looks like many areas, Paraguay in particular, is going to have a very big crop. And I think they're talking record for Paraguay, although it's a little early to call that.
Earlier in our programming, we were discussing how quickly or not so quickly the Brazilian producers managed to get the crop in, and how that relates to the second or Safrina crop corn, and what difference it might make, and that the marketplace is probably waiting to see what happens there. Do you have any thoughts on what conditions they'll be planting into, and what the timing looks like, and how that impacts that crop?
Yeah, the Safrina crop, it looks like it will, again, it's going to depend on when the soybeans are planted, as to when they'll be able to get it harvested and then the Safrina crops get planted. But when we stretch all the way out into February and March and look at the weather expectations, it looks to me like it will be relatively close to normal for Brazil. Not necessarily ideal, but there should be a routine occurrence of rain that will support the planting process. So even for the late planting of Safrina corn and cotton, I think there's potential that the moisture will be very good for that purpose. But then we have to consider, for those that are planted much later, whether or not there's going to be enough moisture around for reproduction, which would be in May, maybe late April and May. And right now, given the El Nino environment, I would expect to see the monsoon there or the rainy season to not necessarily extend later than normal. There's a slight chance it may try to end early, but I think we're going to see this El Nino event in a very fast weakening trend, and I think that will help prevent that from being a problem. So a normal end to the rainy season, which would suggest that the crops that do get planted much later than normal will have to deal with some moisture stress and might yield a little bit lower. But if we can get the bulk of the crop planted normal-ish or just a short period later than normal, I think that they will still eke out a relatively good crop.
In the northern hemisphere, it sounds as if we're trying to kill the wheat crop again, this time in Russia because of cold air. What are conditions like in your assessment?
It's like a broken record, you know, every year the same thing. you know, in Russia, the temperatures the past several mornings have been in the negative 30s and negative lower 40s. And I'm talking about both Fahrenheit and Celsius here. So it is really quite cold in those areas. There is a ton of snow on the ground in those colder areas. But we are expecting the cold air to surge a little farther to the south. And Russia's southern region, which is their primary and most important wheat-producing region, is snow-free at the moment, and so is a big part of Ukraine. And this cold is going to push southward. We probably won't see negative 30s occurring in those areas, but we will see sub-zero readings. So it is going to be imperative that we bring snow in before the coldest air arrives. which should be this weekend into next week. And it does look like there will be wave after wave of snow that will precede the coldest temperatures. So I don't believe that we're going to be faced with any viable potential here for widespread damage across that area. But it will still be worth watching for a little while.
Does that cold air eventually spill across the globe? And does that mean that we get cold air at some point? And is it preceded by this big snowfall we've been hearing about next week, potentially?
Yeah, actually, there are two separate events, but they're related. These two cold surges are associated with a change in the polar vortex, which is being induced by stratospheric warming. And we won't go into all the details. It's kind of complicated. But basically, we're seeing a warming trend taking place in the stratosphere, which forces colder air down to the surface. And whenever we see this in the middle of winter, we usually displace the polar vortex to a lower latitude. And in some cases, we'll split the vortex into two vortices. And in this case, we're going to force the cold air initially over Eastern Europe and Western parts of Russia. And that's kind of what we just talked about. But over in our part of the world, we're going to see a potential for a little temporary secondary polar vortex to develop over Canada. And so we will see a colder air mass coming along and pushing that cold air down into the middle of the U.S. This process will begin next week, and you're right, there is a major winter storm that will precede the arrival of that colder air, and that storm system is due in during the first part of next week, and it will impact a fair amount of the Midwest with some significant snow and wind and rain, and in the southeastern states, probably heavy rain and maybe even a severe weather outbreak.
Well, I'll be traveling next week across the state of Illinois. We've got all afternoon to get from one place to the other. So I'm hopeful that Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday things are okay. Because of the cold air, are you concerned at all about winter wheat in the hard red winter wheat growing regions, Kansas, all the way up to Montana?
Yeah, you know, just like in southern Russia and Ukraine, a big part of the northern plains, the central plains too, as well as Canada, all of that area is snow-free right now. It's been unusually warm in Canada and the northern parts of the U.S., and so the snow is pretty absent. But as we gradually cool things down this weekend into next week, there should be a few waves of light snow that will occur. The snow that occurs in Montana and the Dakotas will not be nearly as great as what we talked about for Russia. So it will be kind of a thin layer of snow, and we will have to watch because the wind could blow that snow off of some of the crops. It's been really warm in Montana in recent weeks here where temperatures have been in the 50s. The crop is semi-dormant. It's not as hardened as it should be. So it is important that we do put some snow on the ground as we cool things down. It will get below zero in the northern plains. For hard red winter wheat country, we'll probably see similar conditions evolve. It'll be a little slower coming. And I do think that there will be an opportunity for a little bit of snow there, too. But the bigger snows are going to be much farther to the east. And so we will have to watch the plains and make sure they get sufficient snow to protect that crop.
Thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. By the way, if you'd like to join us next week on one of those IPA series meetings in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, or DeKalb, you can still do that by registering. Just visit our website. The address there is willag.org, willag.org. The Closing Market Report theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.